Chapter 17. Strategy. Out of the warp. Formaska in sight. Cestus turned his head away as the warp glared against the Rothful's port side. The force of it shone through the metal of the ship's hull as if the Rothful was made of paper, transparent against the light of the abyss. Cestus heard screams and laughter as men's minds were stripped away by it. He threw himself against the housing of a torpedo tube entrance, willing himself not to look. Safrax and Brother Excelinor were beside him, and they too averted their gaze. Cestus had left the bridge almost as soon as he'd arrived. He'd gathered his fellow ultramarines to patrol the corridors, knowing full well what awaited them and the crew of the Rothful. Two teams of what was left of the Honor Guard and Bryngar's wolves moved through the decks and corridors in an effort to steal resolve and snuff out manifesting psychosis wherever they found it. Cestus hoped the presence of the Astartes would be enough. The need for them to be the angels of the Emperor was greater than any other.
"It is as if the warp is at their very beck and call,"
bellowed Excelinor, his voice tinny through his Corvus-patterned nose-cone. Cestus did not reply, for he knew of the terrible truth of his battle brother's words. Moving defiantly down the corridor, the infernal light of the Empyrean was scarlet through his eyelids. Silhouettes of bodies fell in the blazing vista. Men and women fell to their knees, weeping and screaming. A gunshot rang out as an officer turned his sidearm on himself. The sound of a female voice was contiguous with it, reciting paragraphs from the Saturnine Fleet's rules and regulations in an effort to stave off the madness. Visions forced their way into the Ultramarine's mind. The beneficent Emperor, mighty upon his golden throne, and the majesty of the Imperial Palace, and Terra, the beacon of enlightenment in a galaxy surrounded by darkness. Then he saw it burning, continents peeling off, and red gouts of magma boiling away into space. He was an Astartes. He was stronger than this. "Do not give in to madness," he cried aloud to all who could still listen. "Hold on and heed the Imperial truth." For a brief moment, it looked like that the warp would engulf them, but then the visions melted away and the screaming ebbed and died. The ship was still again. The Rothful had emerged on the other side. Cestus breathed hard as the blazing light diminished, leaving a painful afterglow. He adjusted quickly and opened his eyes to see that his brothers were still with him. The shadows came back too, swallowing the dead. The Ultramarine nodded slowly to Safrax and Excelinor, and opened up communications through his gorget as he surveyed the carnage around him. "Admiral, are you still with us?" There was a pause before the vox link crackled, and Kaminska's voice replied,
"We are through the storm," she said, similarly breathless. "Your plan was successful."
"Medical teams are required at my location as well as fleet morticians," Cestus informed her.
"Very well."
"Admiral," Cestus added, "as soon as recovery is underway, I request your presence in the conference chamber."
"Of course, my lord. I shall be there momentarily. Kaminska out."
Half an hour later, when the crews began to organize themselves into shifts to recover the bodies and the wounded, Kaminska had Helmsmistress Venkmeyer tour the worst-hit sections of the ship and make a report of their losses. In normal circumstances, Kaminska would have done this herself, demonstrating to the crew that their leader cared about the deaths and the terrible tragedy that had befallen them. More urgent matters pressed for her attention, however, and she was not about to ignore the request of an Astartes. So she had made her way to the conference chamber as bidden. Within, the remaining Astartes force awaited her.
"Welcome, Admiral," said Cestus, standing at the edge of the oval table with Safrax to his right and his other battle brothers arrayed around him.
The space wolf Bryngar sat opposite with his warriors, but did not acknowledge the Admiral's arrival.
"Please sit," the Ultramarine captain said sternly, despite trying to soften his mood with a small smile.
Now the council was assembled, Cestus surveyed the room, looking into the eyes of each person present.
"It is beyond all doubt," he began, "that the word-bearers are in league with the warp. They are utterly lost."
Hardened faces returned his gaze as the Ultramarine articulated what they already knew in their hearts.
"With such dark allies at their disposal, together with the furious abyss, they are a formidable opponent," Cestus continued. "But we have a slim hope. I have discovered the nature of the word-bearer's plan and how it is to be employed." Bryngar twitched at the remark. The Space Wolf clearly knew of the methods that the Ultramarine had used to discover the information they needed. He also knew of Motep's subsequent revival. The absence of the Thousand Sun from the conference spoke volumes as to his demeanour on that matter. "Make no mistake," Cestus began, "what the Word-Bearers are planning is audacious in the extreme. In assaulting Macragge, there are several factors that any enemy must consider before committing his forces," he explained. "Firstly, the planetary fleet held in high orbit consists of a flotilla of several cruisers and escorts. It would not be easy for any foe, however determined or well-armed, to break through without significant losses. Should he be successful, though, the enemy must then face the static orbital deterrence on the surface, Macragge's battery of defense lasers."
"And the Furious Abyss is supposed to achieve this feat," scoffed Bryngar. "Impossible."
Cestus nodded in agreement. "Had you asked me the same an hour ago, I would have concurred," the Ultramarine admitted. "The Word-Bearer's strategy has two key elements. It all begins at Formaska, which the Word-Bearers plan to hit with cyclonic torpedoes to destroy it."
"I know little of Ultramar," growled the Wolfguard. "But Formaska is a dead moon. Why not use their cyclonics against Macragge directly?"
"A direct assault against Macragge would be suicide. Its defense lasers would cripple their fleet before they made landfall and render any attempt to subdue Gilliman untenable," he explained. "The debris from Formaska's destruction will achieve their ends indirectly. The Legion will divert forces to the aid of Macragge, caught in the asteroid storm of the moon's demise, and the Word-Bearers will strike as they are divided and take them utterly by surprise."
"I've seen it," said Bryngar. "On Proxus 12, an asteroid passed too close and came apart. It was a feral planet. Those people thought the world was ending. Fire was falling from the sky. Every impact was like an atomic hit. It won't destroy Macragge, but it'll kill millions."
"That is not all," Cestus continued. "The Furious Abyss will then use the debris like a shield, allowing them to get past the warning stations and satellites around Macragge and draw close enough for a viral payload to be effective. Only that ship is powerful enough to weather the inevitable storm of fire from the defense lasers. The death toll from the viral strike will be near total. Gilliman and the Legion will be divided, some of our forces probably destroyed on Macragge, when the remainder of the Word-Bearer's fleet will strike. I do not know whether we could recover from such a blow, should it succeed."
"What then is to be done?"
the Wolfguard asked gruffly. "We are nearing Macragge, and soon will be out of the warp," said the Ultramarine, a nod from Kaminska confirming his words. "So, too, are our enemies. It will require discipline, guile, and timing." Cestus paused and looked around the room again. His gaze ended on Kaminska. "Most of all, it will require sacrifice." Space ruptured and spat out the Furious Abyss, edged hard in the diamond light of Macragge's sun. Shoals of predators shimmered out alongside it, like sea creatures leaping around the bow of a ship. Caught in the anathema of reality, they coiled in on themselves and seethed out of existence, their psychic essence dissipating without the warp to sustain them. The Furious Abyss looked little worse than it had when it had left Thule. The attack of the escort squadron had destroyed some of the gun batteries on its dorsal and ventral surfaces, and there were countless tiny pockmarks on its hull from the impacts of doomed fighter craft that had crashed into it after their crews had lost their minds. Those scars did nothing to diminish the majesty of the vast scarlet ship, however. It took a full minute to emerge from the warp rift torn before it, and in those moments the warp was full of nothing but slabs of hull plating and engine cowlings, all streaming into real space. Every warning station around Macragge instantly recognized the scale of the ship and demanded its identity. No reply was forthcoming. The image of Macragge filled the central viewport on the bridge of the Furious Abyss. Flanking it were tactical readouts of the system, which were full of early warning stations and military satellites.
"There it is," said Zadkiel. "Hateful, is it not? Like a boulder squatting in the path of the future."
Magos Guriod stood beside Zadkiel, mechadendrites clicking like insectoid limbs, withered arms folded across his chest.
"It evokes no emotion," the Magos replied neutrally.
Zadkiel sniffed his mild contempt at the passionless Mechanicum drone.
"As a symbol, it has no equal," he said. "The majesty of a stagnant universe, the ignorance of the powerful. The Ultramarines could have done anything with the worlds under their dominion, and they chose to forge this tired echo of a past that never was."
Guriod remained unmoved. He had come to bear witness to the launching of the torpedoes that would end a world, the unbridled destructive forces yielded by the mech science of Mars's devotion to the Omnissiah. The Magos were standing in the position once occupied by Belanus, who had fallen at Baca.
"I take it your presence means that my former assault captain has been recovered," Zadkiel snapped, annoyed at Guriod's unwillingness to bask in his self-perceived reflected glory.
"He dreams fitfully, my lord. When the Sus-An membrane failed and he roused somewhat unexpectedly, I was forced to take more drastic methods to secure him," said the Magos.
"See that he does not waken again until the transition is complete. Once Formasca is destroyed, we shall be joining Corferon's forces on the ground. Belanus is to be part of that invasion force."
"Yes, my lord,"
Guriod said, showing no fear. Zadkiel turned his attention back to the viewport. All was in place now. He would lead the assault that would be remembered forever in history. A few moments passed. Then the bridge vox units crackled.
"Awaiting your mark, Admiral," said Corferon's voice, transmitted across the system from Kalth.
Even at these relatively short distances, only the most advanced system could allow communication between the two ships without the need for an astropath.
"It shall be forthcoming,"
said Zadkiel, turning his attention to another viewscreen.
"Master Malforian,"
he intoned, awaiting the grizzled countenance of his weapon master. The nightmarish visage of the badly injured word-bearer was forthcoming.
"At your command, my lord,"
Malforian responded.
"Open the frontal torpedo apertures and load the first wave of cyclonics,"
Zadkiel commanded with relish.
"It begins at Formasca. Let us unleash devastation and bring about a new era of man."
Sakharov snapped orders at the bridge crew and dispatched runners as the Furious Abyss prepared for battle stations. The navigation crew began orienting the ship towards Formasca, its prow arc aimed like a sniper's sight on his kill. The moon was on the screen. Deep lava-filled gullies wormed their way across its continents, broken by boiling seas. The primitives of ancient Macrag thought Formasca was the eye of a god, and that it was bloodshot with anger, Zadkiel said, to himself more than the unappreciative Magos.
Sometimes, when the lava fields grew, they thought the eye had opened and looked down on them as prey. They prophesied the day when the god would finally decide to reach down and consume them all. That day has arrived, he concluded.
Admiral!
The sibilant voice of Chaplain Ichthalon came through on the bridge vox.
"What is it, Chaplain?" Zadkiel snapped.
"The supplicants are stirring," Ichthalon told him. "There is movement in the warp. It seems that our pursuers have yet to give up the fight."
"See that they do not interfere,"
snarled Corferon from the long-wave vox before Zadkiel could reply.
"I'm bringing the fleet into an assault pattern. Kiliman knows we are here by now. Fulfill your mission, Zadkiel."
"So it is written," replied Zadkiel. "So it shall be."
He returned to Malforian.
"Your status, weapon master?"
"A few more minutes, my liege," Malforian replied. "We are encountering some problems with the torpedo apertures."
"Inform me as soon as we're ready to fire the cyclonics,"
ordered Zadkiel, his tone betraying his impatience at the unforeseen delay.
"My lord," Helmsmaster Sakharov interrupted, "the Wrathful is coming abeam. They are priming weapons."
Zadkiel exhaled his annoyance. He should have excised this thorn from his side long ago.
"Malforian," he barked into the vox, "send all targeting solutions to the bridge once the Imperial lapdogs are in our sights.
The wrathful does not deserve the honour of dying as part of this history, but we shall grant them that honour nonetheless. The wrathful appeared on the left view screen. She had lost half her guns down one side and was followed by a tail of wreckage tumbling out of her ravaged engine and cargo areas. Her hull was weathered and pitted by the lashes of the warp, covered in the tooth marks of Empyrean predators. Zadkiel smiled maliciously when he saw the wrecked ship. He would derive great pleasure from this.
Let us finish her!
The wrathful limped from the warp and went immediately to battle stations. Aft thrusters burning as hot as they were able, the once formidable Imperial vessel drove head-on towards the waiting form of the Furious Abyss. Diverting power to its port side, the great ship turned grindingly slowly on its aft axis until its still-functioning broadsides were presented to the foe. Beams of azure light lit up all the way down the Wrathful's flank, and in seconds the blazing fury of her lances was unleashed. Explosions rippled down the armoured hull of the Furious Abyss, together with the immense blast flares of shield impacts. These wounds were a mere sting to a beast such as this, and the word-bearer vessel responded with a devastating salvo. As the crimson light rays of the Furious's broadside cannon spat out, the Wrathful was already moving, trying to bring the enemy vessel's prow abeam of their lances. The shields of the Imperial ship disintegrated against the assault, and the aft decks were raked by deadly fire, explosive impact sending out chunks of debris and spilling swathes of crew. Still, the Wrathful endured, its last-ditch manoeuvre bringing it away from the deadly barrage. Torpedoes soared from the vessel's prow, followed by a second volley from the lances. Again, the Furious were stung and dorsal cannons swung in their mounts to bring their munitions to bear. Incendiaries crumpled against the Wrathful swerving prow, fully extended broadsides, punching ragged holes through its hull armour. Annoyed at the tenacity of this little wasp, the mighty Furious Abyss turned to present its full armament against their aggressor. The damage sustained by the Wrathful had slowed it, but even still it could have fled if it had wanted to. Instead, the Imperial vessel stood its ground, making a defiant last stand. Lances flashing, the Wrathful poured everything it had left of the word-bearers. It wasn't enough. The Furious Abyss had turned, and now it unleashed devastation. Zadkiel observed the short-lived battle from the bridge. The Wrathful was in their sights. The might of his ship was at his disposal.
"Crush them!" he snarled.
Malfourian replied his affirmation. Light and fire filled the viewscreen a moment later as the Furious's guns wrecked the Imperial vessel. Its engines died and great fissures were rent in its hull as it slowly drifted, pulled by the gravity well of Formasca. As the Wrathful fell away, sparks flashed sporadically, rendering it in a grim cast as vented coolant pipes billowed in hazy plumes.
"I had expected more from a son of Gilliman," Zadkiel admitted. "How could such a desperate plan ever succeed? The Ultramarines are deserving of their death warrant."
"Lord Zadkiel?" It was Sakharov again. Zadkiel turned to face him.
"What is it, Helmsmaster?" he snapped.
"Shuttles, my liege," he explained. "Heading for the port side."
Zadkiel was nonplussed.
"How many?"
15, my lord," Sakharov replied. "Too close for lances."
Zadkiel paused for a moment, still confused as to this latest Imperial gambit. The answer came swiftly.
"They seek to gain entry through the torpedo apertures," he said. "Should I give the order to close them, Lord Zadkiel?"
"Do it,"
Zadkiel snapped,
"and engage dorsal cannons. Bring them down!"